evening, councillors. Good evening, staff, and good evening to our community members in the audience. Great to see you. Welcome to this council meeting number 2 on Monday, the 23rd of January 2017. Does feel like 2015, doesn't it? Don't know how the last 2 years have gone. Quickly, the time being 5:30. I would like to remind all in attendance that it is council policy to record council meetings. The audio recording of this meeting will be made available to the public on Council's website for a period of 12 months. In accordance with Council policy, I'll ask the General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
And that has been confirmed. At this stage, I would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the Tasmanian Aboriginal community as the traditional and original owners and continuing custodians of this land on which we gather today, and acknowledge elders past and present. Attendance tonight is myself, Councillor Wass, our Deputy Mayor, Councillor Reet, Councillor Atkinson, Councillor Berry, Councillor Fox, Councillor Percy, Councillor Bastone and Councillor Winter. From staff, we have our General Manager, Mr Arnold. We have our Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen. Our Executive Manager, Organisational Development, Ms Hughes. Our Manager, Finance, Mr Jones. Our Manager, Governance and Property Services, Mr Smee. Our Manager, Development Services, Mrs Tyler Moore, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have 2 apologies. We have Councillor Chadden on leave of absence, and also an apology from Councillor Grace. On page 2, the next item is confirmation of minutes of the Council meeting number 1, held on the 9th of January 2017. I have a mover in Councillor Percy, and a seconder in Councillor Bastone. I'll put that to the vote that the minutes of Council meeting number 1, held on the 9th of January 2017, be confirmed. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last Council meeting on the 9th of January. There was one on the 16th of January regarding risk and Council's risk appetite. Declarations of interest at this stage, Councillors. I'll ask if there's any Councillor that has a declaration of interest they wish to make. There is none. We'll move on to page 3. Questions on notice from the public. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public. Questions without notice from the public. Are there any questions without notice? There are none. Thank you. Questions on notice from councillors. There's a question from Councillor Chadden regarding works on Roslyn Avenue, which were being done today, and a response from Mr Reeve. There was a question from Deputy Mayor Reed regarding the Alum Cliffs and a response from Mr Ferrier. Councillor Grace asked a question about Spring Farm, to which the General Manager, Mr Arnold, responded. Councillor Percy asked a question relating to roadside slashing, particularly on Bruny Island, to which Mr Reeve has responded. And on page 5, A Day at the Beach, Councillor Atkinson has submitted, I think, a question with notice. Is that right? Thank you. Regarding the day on the beach and a response from Mr Arnold. Councillor Winter has submitted a question regarding the Copping Seasail, and again the response from Mr Arnold. Questions without notice from councillors. Are there any questions without notice? Councillor Berry?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I have 2 questions. The first one relates to the situation that we've had a few recently where development applications have been resolved by delegation, where there have been representations. Councillors will recall that this is an issue that was looked into perhaps 2 years ago. And it's also one of the fundamental reasons that council meetings were made fortnightly rather than monthly. My question in relation to these situations is, what investigations have been done by planning staff to determine the reason that the statutory time limit of 42 days has been exceeded? And the second part of the same question is, what recommendations do planning staff have to resolve this situation and ensure that it happens as little as possible?
Thank you, Councillor. Very honest. Mrs. Tyler Moore, if she's able to answer some of that for you. Mrs. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor. I'd like to take the question on notice so they can provide a more detailed assessment about why those time frames are tight. The applications are being made within the 42-day time limit. It's just that if it needs to come to a council meeting with a lead-up of a fortnight, it does go over the time, and that's why the decisions are made. But as I said, I'll take it on notice to provide more detail about those specific applications.
Thank you, Mrs. Tyler Moore. And the second question, Councillor?
Yes, thank you. I had actually notified Mr. Tyler Moore that I was going to ask a question. The second question relates to a large truck that's parked and has been for the last week on land close to Roberts Point with multiple advertising signs on it saying containers for sale or for lease. I suspect that the truck is parked on Crown land, but I don't know. I'd appreciate it if staff could look into this advertising sign, determine if it's legal, and if it is not, do something about it. Thank you.
I'll ask Mrs. Tyler Moore if she'd like to answer that and take the notice question on notice, I should say.
I'd like to take the question on notice and we'll look into it.
Thank you. No further questions, Councillor Berry? Mm-hmm. Councillor Bastane?
I'd like to ask a question about roadside slashing, since we had one from about Bruni last week. Now, the main area of Kettering is being beautifully kept, right up to the turn of Ferry Road. From there on, it's a disgrace. Parts of the weeds and things on the edge of the highway are taller than I am now, and I'm just wondering if there's going to be some roadside slashing between Kettering and Woodbridge.
You mean on the Channel Highway?
Sorry, yes, on the Channel Highway.
Because that's not our road, you're aware of that.
Yes, but I thought that we did. We've certainly, the council's certainly doing all the cutting within Kettering, right to the ferry turn-off.
I'll ask Mr. Arnold to respond.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Council's currently undertaking roadside slashing on the council road network, but I will ask council officers to follow up with the Department of State Growth regarding the Channel Highway.
Thank you.
Any question? Yes, that was your only question?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is to follow up to the question that I put on notice. I wondered if the General Manager could quantify the amount of in-kind support. You've said that there's significant additional in-kind support. I mean, I understand it's probably still ongoing, and so you don't know how much it's going to be, but I just wanted some idea of what we're talking about.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Atkinson, at this stage, I don't know the answer to that. I will endeavour to get the answer, but as you can appreciate, the event is not until Thursday of this week, and we'll have to...
Yeah, well, I'd appreciate it if after that, whether you could advise the information. Thank you.
Councillor Winner.
When will details of Kingra's additional equity purchase in the Copping C-Cell project be made public?
I think I can answer that. At the next meeting of the Copping board, it should be ratified at that, and thereafter there is a number of actions to be taken so that that can occur. I think if we go back probably 3 months, 2 months was when the work was done, the paperwork done was in relation to the purchase into it by Clarence. So that it is happening, but it will be relied upon the next meeting. Does that answer your question? Is it significant or sufficient? Thank you. Councillors, we'll move on to the next item. Motions of which notice has been given. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no notices of motion received. Petitions still being actioned. There were no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period. Council has received a petition containing 24 signatures to investigate sealing of Lockleys Road, Adventure Bay, and a report will be submitted to Council at its meeting on the 14th of February 2017. And I'm looking for, in relation to that petition, I'm looking for a formal motion. Thank you, Councillor Berry, and thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillors, I'll put that recommendation, moved by Councillor Berry, seconded by Councillor Reid, that the petition be received and referred to the appropriate department for report to Council. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. We'll move on to page 7. And just to advise councillors that the planning authority now is in process, so we're acting as a planning authority, and the time being 5:40 p.m. The first report of officers delegated authority for the period 23rd of December 2016 to Thursday the 11th of January 2017, and there is a recommendation on page 9. Thank you, Councillor Fox. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Any questions or comments, councillors, on pages 7 and 8? I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Percy, that the report be noted. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 10, appeal resolution for DA 2016 289, development application for partial change of use to storage containers yard at 64 Channel Highway, Kingston, for Larkin Crease. And there is a recommendation on page 15.
Could I move that the matter be discussed?
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillors, I'll put that the matter be discussed as moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Atkinson. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. At this stage, perhaps I'll ask Mrs. Tyler Moore for an update and then we'll discuss it from there, if councillors are happy with that. Mrs. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'd just like to inform Council that we've been made aware late this afternoon that the original representor for this application is not, well, we knew that went to parties appeal, but he was unaware that it had gone to appeal. Council's followed its obligations with respect to notifying of the decision, and the representor would need to go directly to Rampat to ask whether they can join as a party late to the appeal. We have no advice as to whether they can or can't do that. That's up to Rampat. But it's my understanding from speaking to that person that they do have an interest in the application.
Thank you, Mrs. Tolemore. Councillors, open for discussion. Councillor Fox.
It does concern me that as long as I've been on council now, I have never been faced with making a planning decision which has got a 5-year sunset clause in it. Generally the answer is quite clear from a planning point of view that it's either a yes, it's agreed, or no, it's not agreed. And it concerns me that the zoning of this area it's stated in the document is not appropriate for this this activity, that the activity is in fact industrial use, and it should be occurring in an industrial zone. I'd like to hear what other councillors, how they feel, but having this information just given to us right now by Mrs. Tyler Moore makes me feel that we need to tread very carefully, particularly as there is an appellant who would be affected by our decision, who may be compromised if we went along the lines of the recommendation in this report. So I'd like to hear how other councillors feel, but I don't feel comfortable with this recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Atkinson.
I guess initially I just had a question as to do with the timing. So when will we know when Rampat is accepted the appellant, and when do we have to respond to this offer of mediation or this next stage of mediation?
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Mrs. Tyler Moore, are you able to answer that question?
it would be up to the representative when they contact me if they choose to contact Rampat, so we wouldn't know the timing or how long we would need to wait for that. And as insofar as our response, council's response to Rampat about the hearing, I believe our due date has actually passed, but we did ask additional time because they appreciate we have to go to council meetings and the timing. Insofar as that, I would have to take it on notice to provide the end date for that response, but otherwise the hearing would be scheduled for no earlier than March, but that would be a full hearing if the appellant doesn't accept the mediation we offer.
So on that basis, council needs to make a decision tonight. Thank you. Further discussion, councillors? Councillor Berry?
Yeah, well, I just don't want a discussion to stop no one else had the light on, but I share some of the concerns, but on the other hand, we have here a mediated response to some of the concerns expressed when this came previously to council, and this mediated response has come to council because it has to be agreed to by council. If we, as I understand it, amend it or decline it, and I'd like some confirmation of that, this matter would automatically go to RMPAT, the full sitting of RMPAT, and so maybe someone could answer that question for me, because that is how I believe it, and of course with all the expense involved. So if we decline this, does this matter go to RMPAT?
Mrs. Tyler-Moore, you're in the hot seat tonight. Can we have another response, please?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. If a decision's not made tonight, then it is likely to go to a full hearing. If the decision made tonight is to not accept the mediation, it will certainly go to a full hearing. And obviously it's up to the tribunal to determine which way they go.
Yeah. So the answer is yes to that question. Which makes me a little bit nervous about changing what we have, which is a mediated solution, mediated by staff. This was actually recommended for approval originally by staff, and my experience of that, I'm no lily sort of white when it comes to this, but my experience of us declining and refusing recommendations of staff, that it gets expensive, and we have, I think, on memory, one, possibly two in the 16 years that I've been on council, that where we have had a recommendation from staff that has actually gone to RMPAT, and RMPAT have agreed with council decision for a reason. So I'm concerned about this. I think that the time limit as a reasonable one, maybe 3 years might have been a bit better. And I acknowledge what Councillor Fox is saying, that, you know, either we approve this or we don't approve it. But we do have a negotiated solution, and I'm inclined to accept that. But I hope other councillors will have something to say.
Thank you. Councillor Percy.
Yeah, on the original, when it came to council before, one of the things I didn't like, obviously, was the stockpiles of gravel and the dust that was being blown around. The other one was the operating hours. Now the person has agreed to those, so that's removed that. I'm just wondering, the concern I have is the permit will expire 5 years. Now, if I was a business person, I'd like to have some sort of certainty about investing in a property. I'd like to know that it probably goes more than 5 years. So has the owner been contacted to see whether this 5 years is acceptable, or is this going to be put on the owner?
I think you need to read part A, Councillor Percy, that council accepts the offer made by the appellant to resolve the appeal. Am I right there, Mrs. Tylemore?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the appellant actually only offered components of of the decision there. They didn't offer the limited 5 years at the recommendation through their officer to try and appease the councillor's concerns about the change of use. The idea behind was that was it allows a person, so this isn't going to be a new person, it'll be a continuation of the person who operates with respect to the question that was just asked about if someone was to go into the site, but it would allow a time period for that greater area for its true potential to be realised, and then it may become more in line. At the end of the 5 years, the applicant could apply for extension of time, but it would be a decision that would need to be made whether it's appropriate or not. But at that time, the circumstances surrounding that subject site may have very well changed.
Thank you. Do you wish to continue? Thank you. Councillor Atkinson, I think you asked a question first time round, did you?
That's right, yeah. I've got a couple more questions. Councillor Fox raised whether this sunset... There's an awful echo in this speaker. Councillor Fox raised whether a sunset clause was a normal thing, or I was just interested in whether that's something that's often used, or whether this is an unusual suggestion.
Mrs. Tylermore?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. It's not a common occurrence for the applications that we deal with here at Kingborough. It is specifically tailored to try and adjust to the change of the zoning, and as I mentioned, to allow that greater area to develop as is expected with the change in the zoning, with the change of the planning scheme.
Thank you. And then further, I was asking about the timing of the process. As you say, this 5-year limit, or whatever we come up with, is a further offer back to the other party, as far as I understand. So presumably there's a process to follow there that they'll have to come back to say whether they accept that. What's the process if we go back with a different offer?
Mrs. Tylermore?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, we would go back to them and offer it, and they may choose to throw it out, and they'll continue to a full hearing, so we still may end up at a full hearing, or they may just accept it and agree to that limited time, and because it's something on top of that we've offered, but we don't have the delegation as officers to make that offer without coming to a council meeting.
No, thank you. Look, my feelings are similar to Councillor Fox, that we agreed as a council that we don't want this development. Now, I understand the reasons that it's gone to appeal, and that could be a big and expensive process if we lose that appeal. So I think that this suggestion is reasonable, but I'm also... Councillor Barry's sort of stolen my thunder. I'm also concerned that 5 years, although if you were setting up a new business, is a reasonable time, 5 years is quite a long time in the development of that area. I mean, this is not this council, it's well towards the end of the next council's time. We're talking about how quickly Spring Farm's being developed, how quickly Whitewater's being developed. The municipality, or particularly Kingston, is changing rapidly, and I think, hope that in 5 years that area will have changed a lot and settled down a lot, and I think that that's a long time to allow this, what we consider an inappropriate development, to be allowed in that area. So I'd be interested in this motion, but I'd be much more keen for it if it said 3 years, not five, in there.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Any further councillors wish to add to the debate?
I have a question.
Question?
In terms of the person who objected to this proposal in the first place and hasn't been aware of that, how would this position that we adopt, how would that be managed in terms of whether that they would be joined with council, and would they have to also agree to this recommendation, or... would this go ahead regardless of how their response might be?
Very difficult to answer, but if they wish to also side with council because they're able to, with RANPAT accepting that, there would be two of us. But if they chose not to, or RANPAT didn't allow them,
we would be on our own either way. Can you sum that up any better, Mrs. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Currently they're not a party, so they have no decision. It'll be up to Rampart whether they allow them as a late party, and I really have no advice at all as to whether they're going to allow that. Courts are often very strict on the timelines for people to make submissions to become parties, but I guess tonight's decision will influence the representor's decision whether they will proceed to appeal.
Councillor Berry.
Yes, Mayor, I would like to, with considerable debate, I'd like to move the recommendation. I think we this is not an easy decision, but if anyone's got anything further to add to the debate, I'd be interested to hear it, but I'd like to move the recommendation as listed.
Thank you. And Councillor Winter will second that. Do you wish to speak to the motion, Councillor Berry? You don't? I'll ask Councillor Bastone to speak.
I don't want to speak to the motion.
Certainly you may ask a question.
Okay. Are we able to alter this so that it says the permit will expire in 3 years from the date of its approval?
Councillor Berry and Councillor Winter have moved it as printed, but if you have sufficient numbers, you can make an amendment.
Well, I move that the permit that we change number 4 to the permit will expire 3 years from the date of its approval, and the approved use shall cease immediately.
So I have Councillor Bastone and Councillor Atkinson. Do you wish to speak to your amendment, Councillor Bastone?
No, I think it's self-explanatory.
Does anyone wish to speak to the amendment? Councillor Berry?
Can I just ask a question of probably Ms. Tyler Moore as to how the significance of this change might be received by the developer, if she has any idea about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I have no idea how the applicant may respond to that. They may not accept either 5 or 3. They may still choose to go to a full hearing. I don't know which way they'd go.
Thank you, Mrs. Tullamore. Anyone else wish to speak to the amendment? In that case, do you wish a right of reply to close debate on the amendment, Councillor Bastone? No. I'll put the amendment. Councillors, the change, one word, on A4. The permit will expire in 3 years, not 5 years. That's the only change, so I'll put that in to you. The amendment moved by Councillor Bastone and seconded by Councillor Atkinson. Councillors in favour of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
We'll have a division or a show of hands, please, for the amendment. Those in favour of the amendment are Councillors Bastone, Fox, Atkinson, Reet and Wass, and opposing are Councillors Winter, Percy and Berry. The amendment is carried. So the recommendation before us is on the screen and is exactly right on the screen. Are there any debate on that, or should I put that? Councillor Atkinson?
I'd just like to emphasise, I think this provides clear indication of what the council wants. We've already said what, you know, we talked, or debated at long length about what sort of development should be on this site. The zone clearly explains what sort of zone it is. This is clearly outside of what we expect the zone to be, and this provides an indication that we don't want this to continue into the distant future. We're giving some compromise for it to be used for a couple of years, but it's a clear indication that we want the use to change.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Fox?
When this first came to council, I was particularly concerned about the hours of operation, and I think the recommendation of having it from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday and only used for office or admin purposes during the weekend is a big improvement.
Thank you. Further debate, councillors? Councillor Berry, would you like to close debate?
I think we've probably heard the views. It's not an easy decision for council to make. We did have, and we still have, a mediated solution with a time limit that, if I was a business person, I'd find pretty difficult to plan ahead, I must confess. But whether that is an issue that's going to fire this decision into a full hearing or not really it depends upon the developer. I'm concerned that that is what might happen, but there's nothing I can do about it.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Berry, seconded by Councillor Winter, with the amendment as printed on the board. Councillors in favour, I'll ask you to please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimous. The next item is page 16, development application for a garage at 5 Nicholas Drive, Kingston Beach, for Mr. B.L. Masters. And there is a recommendation on page 25 and 6. I have a mover in Councillor Percy. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Winter. Thank you. Councillor Percy, wish to speak to the recommendation?
No, I think it's very well covered there, and I think it's compliant with the relevant standards, so nothing else to say there.
Thank you. Any other councillors wish to speak to Councillor Reid?
Look, I understand that it meets the planning scheme requirements, but I am a bit hesitant about this one only because it's the size. This is a very big shed, again, in a residential area, and you may recall that last year we dealt with one in Redwood Road where it met all the requirements. And I then went and had a look at it after it was constructed, and the next door neighbours promptly sold their place because even though it met all the requirements, it was really intrusive, and it's one of these catch 22. We have to approve this, but I just wanted to put on record that I don't like it because I think that even though it is set 9 metres away from the living room of the person who's made the representation, I can understand their concerns about the visual impact. No, it's not blocking their view, and they will still have their water views, but sheds are a monstrosity. It doesn't really matter what you do to a shed, they just are. They're not very attractive things. Nobody in this day and age has designed a nice looking shed. So I do feel for them. I don't want to see us in a situation where what arose in Redwood Road, but we don't have any capacity, any grounds to reject this on, so it has to be supported, unfortunately.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Further discussion, councillors? Councillor Percy, you'd like to close debate? No. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Percy, seconded by Councillor Winter, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Manager Development Services be received and that the development application for a garage at 5 Nicholas Drive, Kingston Beach, for Mr. B.L. Masters be approved subject to the following conditions, and there are 6 conditions listed. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 31, a planning scheme amendment application for amendment to clause 14.5.1, page 1, and 26.5.1, I take it that's page 1 or P1, of the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 by including a site-specific minimum lot size at 3 Sawdust Road, Adventure Bay, lot 200 Bonnyvale Drive, Howden. That's Certificate of Title 162233-200, and 50 Raider Road, Kettering, and 16 Dillons Road, Alonna, Certificate of Title 24430-1,
for Kingborough Council. There is a recommendation on this on page 61. Thank you, Councillor Berry. Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Berry, do you wish to speak to the motion? No. Does any councillor wish to speak?
Do I have leave to speak?
I asked you to, and I think you said no.
Thank you. thank you, Mayor. We've got a very comprehensive report in front of us that goes into detail with these, I think, four particular properties involved. It doesn't seem that if we agree with this amendment that it increases significantly the subdivision potential of these four properties, which it seems are in a fairly unique situation. The question that I have, and I don't know, it may not be a very easy one for Mr. Tullamore to answer, she hasn't been here while the interim planning scheme is being gone through, is these four properties. I mean, it sort of has a feel that they're kind of being cherry-picked. I just like some reassurance. It's mentioned somewhere in the report, I can't remember exactly where, that there could be some other properties in a similar situation. And, the amendment we are being asked to agree to specifically mentions four properties. I'd like some reassurance that we're not going to receive more applications over the next 6 to 12 months for similar amendments.
Mrs. Tullamore, are you able to answer Councillor Berry, please?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, it is my understanding that these were the only occurring properties that had more than one zoning, but if I could take it on notice to just double check with our strategic planner, I'll provide that response.
Thank you. Councillor Fox?
I know the report is quite substantial, and I found it quite complicated language. I was lucky enough to ask Miss Gray to explain it to me in one sentence, which she did very well. And I just want to be reassured that the outcome of this decision doesn't, in fact, have a great impact. It appears to me that it only formalises a situation and only allows a block to be subdivided or to be built on, which otherwise would not be allowed to be built on, but it doesn't allow for a higher density subdivision. Is that correct?
Mrs. Tullamore?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, that is correct. It's not giving them any particular advantage. It is formalising the differences between the zones.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone?
My question is about 50 Rada Road. It's my belief that Rada Road is a private road. Is that right?
Mrs. Tullamore?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I would need to take that on notice. I'm not sure.
If you could, please, because it... I'm not sure it's a council road, and as such, the access to 50 Rada Road is problematic.
Thank you. Further discussion, councillors? Or should I put the recommendation? Do you wish to sum up, Councillor Berry? No? Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Berry, seconded by Councillor Reid, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, Planning Authority Committee resolves that the report of the Manager Development Services be received and that 1. In accordance with Section 34(1)(b) of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, Council initiates Draft Amendment PSA 2016-5. 2. In accordance with Section 35(1)(a) of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, Council certifies Draft Amendment PSA 2016-5 as meeting the requirements of Section 32 of the Act. 3. In accordance with Section 35(4) of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, Council forwards a copy of the sealed instrument of certification and the draft amendment to the Tasmanian Planning Commission. 4. In accordance with Section 56S of the Water and Sewer Industry Act 2008, Council refers draft amendment PSA 2016-5 to TasWater. 5. In accordance with Section 38 of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, Council publicly exhibits the draft amendment PSA 2016-5 for a period of 28 days. Councillors that are in agreement with that recommendation, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 67. And we are now going to resume the open session of Council at 6:11 p.m. And the first is an officer's report on the conditions of hire for community halls, and there is a recommendation on page 70. Thank you, Councillor Berry. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Berry.
Thank you, Mayor. This looks quite straightforward, but it isn't. I just think we need to... I'd really move the matter to be discussed, but we can discuss it with the recommendation having been moved. I'm just concerned, not because I think the general manager, please don't think for a moment, can't make a wise decision, but we're asking the general manager or the delegate to decide when someone comes along and asks for a party and makes a request that alcohol be drunk, to make some arbitrary decision as to whether this is okay or not. Now, I'm not sure that's a very good idea. I think the no alcohol condition is very good. I think there needs to be a bond of at least $1,000 if alcohol is to be served, and I think there needs to be a separate application for consumption of alcohol. I think we're putting the general manager or his or her delegate in a very difficult position, and they're the ones who are going to be blamed if something goes wrong, which I can assure you, if there are 10 applications for drinking alcohol, at least one of them will go wrong, and there'll be damage. I'm sure the general manager in his wisdom will make the right decision 99% of the time, but I believe that there should be a separate application for alcohol, that it should be looked at, and that there be a minimum bond of $1,000 for any party that wishes to serve alcohol. I'd be interested to hear what my colleagues think about that.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I agree with Councillor Berry that this isn't a straightforward issue. It would be great if it was, but there are too many variances and different scenarios under here. But I just wanted to start my contribution with a question, just to clarify in my mind that I'm reading the recommendation correctly. So clause B says that the general manager be authorised to issue an exemption where it can be demonstrated that the consumption of alcohol will not cause adverse impacts to the facility or neighbours. But then C says hall management committees be given the option to adopt this policy position and discretion to issue exemptions. So does that mean that where there is a hall management committee, they don't have to adopt the policy, they just have the option of adopting the policy, and then they're the ones who determine the exemptions. Is that correct?
Mr. Smee, are you able to answer that for Councillor Rick, please?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor. In framing this report and that recommendation, I've been mindful that we haven't had any complaints of this nature from halls that are managed by hall management committees. And I guess if we accept that hall management committees are well placed with their local knowledge to know who the hirers are and to be in a position to make a common sense judgment in relation to whether the hall they're hiring out is going to have an impact on their community. Some hall management committees may like to
adopt this policy position if they feel it would be beneficial. Others may like to say, look, the situation we've got at the moment works well and we don't wish to change. So that was the basis for providing that flexibility within the recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Sweeney. Continue, Councillor.
I appreciate that, but I think that adds a layer of confusion to the policy in terms of people understanding for different halls what process they have to go through. I would prefer to see that it is compulsory for all hall management committees to adopt this policy, because that in itself isn't necessarily going to change what they're doing, but just, I guess, formalise it, and so that we then have the same process across all of the halls, regardless of where they're located. I assume that that essentially what B is trying to do is to suggest that, for example, that where there is an art exhibition, that it won't, you know, that it can accommodate somebody having a glass of wine at that. Because you don't normally expect art exhibitions to get rowdy, and heaven knows in my 2 years as arts minister I never went to a rowdy arts exhibition opening. Very disappointing. And I guess another example of an exemption, because initially when I read this and I saw include no alcohol, I thought, oh, what about a community group who wants to run a quiz night and wants to run a bar, and I don't want to see them disadvantaged, but I assume that common sense would kick in and that sort of thing would be acceptable. I do share the view of Councillor Berry that we should be including a bond. It's talked about in here, but it's not actually part of the recommendation, because I think we do need to protect ourselves in the event there is some damage, and whether it's $500 or $1,000, I think $1,000 is quite that is a significant amount that some groups may not be able to afford, but I think a more reasonable figure of $500 would be appropriate and achievable for most of the people then who would be wanting to apply to consume alcohol at one of these events. But I do agree we need a policy, because I know that certainly a lot of these halls are located close to residences, and it's frustrating to have to listen to some of the noise that may go on. I guess the slight thing that concerns me is that halls can be used for a lot of, say, 18th and 21st birthdays, and I assume if somebody was to put in an application under this to have alcohol at an 18th or a 21st, it may be rejected because it could be viewed as the type of event that may get out of hand. What then happens for a family celebration that are looking for a low-cost thing? They're likely to move to a house, and the house is likely to be near other houses. So there's kind of a double-edged sword here. So they may still end up annoying neighbours, just different neighbours. But I don't think I think this is the most sensible solution that we can come up with. I don't think we're going to come up with something that's going to satisfy everything. So I'm happy to support this, but I would like to see the inclusion of a bond.
Councillor Fox.
I guess I was going to ask the question when I read this, how could the general manager determine whether it would cause adverse effect for the two neighbouring residents if there was consumption of alcohol, as stated in Clause B? I mean, I'm hoping that the answer would be that they would need to have a responsible serving of alcohol licence, and also they would have to have a permit to serve alcohol, which helps people understand the ramifications of serving alcohol in a public space. And I know with art galleries that is exactly what has to happen. I think Edward Arrowsmith had those licences when the art gallery was open the other day when I attended, and even the people coming to the gallery could not help themselves to a drink. It had to be served to them by the person who had that, done that course and had that license. And if that was a condition of the halls being allowed to serve alcohol, then I would be quite happy with item B. I think we need to be careful that we're not too precious about our halls, because we don't ban alcohol in parks, we don't ban alcohol on our beaches, and both Blacktons Bay and Kingston Beach halls don't have management committees, but I think most of the other management committees do an excellent job, and we've never had any complaints or concerns from those halls. So I personally think it's an excellent recommendation, but I would like to be reassured by the General Manager that my interpretation of item B is the way it's meant to be.
Mr. Smee, would you be willing to give a response to Councillor Fox, please?
Yes, through you, Mr. Mayor. The intent of B is that when a potential hirer comes to customer services, they are advised that we have a no alcohol policy in relation to our hall hire agreement. Now, if the hirer says, look, I'm just running an art exhibition and I want to serve some wine, then obviously that's a situation where customer services will advise, well, we do have provision through application to the General Manager for you to receive a permit for that to occur. Now, if it was a situation where it was an 18th birthday party, we would indicate that the default position is that you can have your 18th there, but you're going to need, the default position is you will be told that we have a no alcohol policy. Now, if they really push the issue, then they'll need to demonstrate quite clearly, and some of the aspects that Councillor Fox has covered off on, although a permit from the Liquor Licensing Board is only required if you are selling alcohol, the responsible service of alcohol is something that we could put on as a condition, but unless the alcohol's being served, it wouldn't come as a requirement from the Liquor Licensing Board. So, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that there's a continuum in relation to the degree to which the likelihood of alcohol being consumed will cause an issue, and the onus is on the hirer to demonstrate that they've put in place sufficient clauses within their application to satisfy council that it's not going to cause an issue.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. That answers all your questions, Councillor Fox. Happy with it?
It leaves it a little bit subjective, I think, which was Councillor Reid's original concern. It does concern me now. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bastow.
My question is, if we have a no alcohol condition with our hall hire agreements, how does this affect the Kettering Hall, which has the cricket club attached to it, which does sell alcohol on a regular basis?
And does have a hall management committee. And I thought Mr. Smee had covered that, so unless you want him to cover that again, I'm happy to ask him to cover that for you.
Well, the hall management committee doesn't really run the cricket club.
No, but they said it. Mr. Smee, would you just reiterate again, please, with the hall management committees?
Yeah, Councillor Bastone's correct. The cricket club has its own club rooms. They're licensed. They're licensed through the Liquor Licensing Board. The cricket club rooms don't come under the hall management committee. They are separate, and as I indicated, they're separately licensed.
Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you. People have raised all sorts of interesting things which I hadn't thought of, which is great. I think we've got to be careful not to be a community of Waleses. We've got to not say no one can have any fun. I suspect quite a lot of alcohol has been drunk at Kingston Beach Hall over the years, and not all of it's been a disaster. I also sympathise with residents that live nearby, and it is awful when you have a rowdy party nearby, and it is awful for the council when there's property damage, so we have to find some sort of middle ground to this. I've got concerns about shifting the problem, and as someone said, you know, to private houses, to the beach, to the skate park, I don't care where, but if you're trying to put on an 18th or a 21st, it's very hard to find a venue now. It's almost impossible to find somewhere that'll host an 18th in Hobart, and I suspect that's the same the further out you go. So I think we have to be a bit careful about how we're approaching this and whether we're saying all fun is banned. What does sort of balance that for me is that this isn't a decision that can't be overturned. If we put this in place and we get people from the community coming to us and saying, this is ridiculous, what a pack of whatever we are, could you loosen up your rules a bit, then we'll hear that and we can make this, you know, either put something more specific in that how you demonstrate that you're going to be responsible. I think we have to be careful about saying, well, nice people at art galleries there, great, and 18-year-olds, we hate them all. We have to be careful about what assumptions we make about people. Similarly, a $1,000 bond for some people would be absolutely prohibitive. That would be just such a massive money they just couldn't comprehend free coming up with $1,000 as a bond for a party. So once again, I think we have to be careful about who we're discriminating against and in what way. Having said all that, I'm happy to support this as written, but I think that we have to listen carefully to what reactions we get, and I am very interested in how the General Manager will assess these applications and how he'll assess, how he'll exercise his discretion on this. I'd be disappointed if we, well, as I said, if we sort of took a blanket position that, there will be no drinking. And similarly, if the assumptions around who could or couldn't be there was to do with whether they were nice people or whether they were, old people or, whatever else. So we have to be very careful about prejudices and assumptions about how people will behave, I think. But I'm prepared to support this.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Percy.
Yeah, thanks. It says here, over the past month, I'm just wondering how often it is. I mean, obviously over Christmas it might be a bit more than other times, but is this a real problem, or has the problem just come up recently? I suppose I'd like to know that for a start. Having been involved in junior football over the years, we've used Kingston Beach Hall many times, and there would have been a lot of alcohol there, but I can't remember any trouble we've had there at all. We've also had the senior citizens, and that was a good way of raising money at those two venues. So I think the best part about this report is we've looked at what other councils do and we've tried to incorporate all those, so that's good that we do that. It says that the option is to adopt this policy position, but I'm not actually, it's a position, but I'm not actually thinking, well, what are we actually adopting? Because, are we increasing the bond by $1,000? Are we going to make that decision now, or is that just going to be left up to Mr. Smee to come back with a policy, or is it a little bit vague in its terms, that's all. I found the report good, and I sort of agree with Councillor Atkinson that we don't want to be a community of wowsers, because it is a good opportunity, not only for 18th birthdays and that, but as for fundraisers for other community groups. So a little bit up in the air about this one. Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Smee, are you able to respond in relation to the happenings at the hall in recent times?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor, in 4.2 of the report, I've indicated that it's not a regular occurrence that our halls do get hired for, well, these particular halls for this type of activity. But Councillor Percy's right, it's the fact that it's summer and it's the party time, and basically every hire that we've had at Blackmans Bay, Kingston and Sandfly and over the past month has resulted in complaints to council following it. And just to clarify, in relation to the bond, we currently charge a $200 bond, but the conditions of hire also require the hirer to agree that they will meet the full cost of any cleaning or damage to the facility. So they forfeit their $200 bond, plus they'll be up for any additional costs. So in terms of what's being recommended, it will be the status quo in relation to the bond and the conditions of hire that do ensure that council's interests in terms of its property are protected.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. Councillor Berry, would you like to close debate?
Thank you, Mayor. We don't seem to have achieved a consensus on the possibility of a bond. I still think a bond of $500 would be appropriate and reasonable to add to this. We don't want to be too precious, as I think Councillor Atkinson has mentioned. On the other hand, the facilities are owned by council and we're responsible to our ratepayers. We actually look after the halls. It's a pity that all of them haven't got hall management committees. My experience of going into the halls is that the moment you go into a hall, you only need to go in about two steps and you can tell whether there's a hall management committee running the place. It's a pity Kingston and Blackmiss Bay don't have a hall management committee as well. I still firmly think there should be a bond. I've heard Mr. Smee's statement about $200, and then if you're lucky, get the money for cleaning. But that hasn't been addressed as an amendment, and I think that we're giving the general manager quite a bit of responsibility here that I'm sure he can make an appropriate decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Berry, seconded by Councillor Percy, that A, council include an alcohol condition within its hall hire agreements. B, the general manager be authorised to issue an exemption to this condition in circumstances where it can be demonstrated that the consumption of alcohol will not cause adverse impacts to the facility or neighbouring residents. C, hall management committees be given the option to adopt this policy position and discretion to issue exemptions. Councillors, those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 71, Little Conyngham Beach, and there is a recommendation on page 73. Thank you, Councillor Reek. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Fox. Councillor Reek.
I think it's fairly straightforward. I don't have anything to add. I support the recommendation. I don't think we need to be taking on additional land responsibilities because we already have a lot of it and it costs a lot. So I support the recommendation.
Thank you. Further debate, councillors? Councillor Fox?
I wasn't sure where Little Conyngham Beach was, so I asked for a map to be provided. And I find it interesting that the report in page 73 says 9.2, given that council has already licensed both the foreshore areas of Conyngham Beach and Clarks Beach, it's considered that there is no justification to acceding to the request when, in fact, the residents are asking, it's a very popular beach with dogs, and the residents are asking that the dogs are being controlled. I presume that Clarks Beach and Conyngham Beach once were also Crown beaches and that council's taken a licence, and I don't see why the staff have taken the position that there's no justification when they could possibly have taken the opposite position in making this report. I'm just wanting to know exactly, other than the fact that we don't want to have more staff resources applied in this area, I would have thought that looking at the overall situation of how these beaches are linked, and it's obvious that a dog walking along the beach goes from one to the other and crosses the one in the middle, and environmental issues haven't been given any consideration whatsoever. It might well be that we have got significant environmental impacts on Little Conyngham Beach that don't exist on Clark or Conyngham Beach. but I'd be really interested to have a bit more detail. It just seems a bit light on detail.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Mr. Smith?
Yeah, to you, Mr. Mayor. The rationale behind my comment there is that Council has licensed Conyngham Beach to meet the recreational needs of the local community and others, and it's also licensed Clark's Beach as an off-lead dog exercise area. So in looking at how well the community is serviced in terms of the amount of Crown land that we've already taken a licence over, I think the Conyngham community are well catered for in that regard. They have one beach where there's no dogs allowed, they have another where there's an off-lead dog exercise area, and hence my comment to add another beach into the mix and add further responsibility to council in terms of fire management, dog management, weed control, erosion control, is not justified, and that's the rationale behind that comment.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Councillor Atkinson?
I just had a question about the current management of Little Conyngham Beach. So it says the majority of the coastline is Crown Reserve, some of which is managed by Parks and Wildlife Service in accordance with its classification under the Nature Conservation Act, etc., etc. So what's the policy on dogs on that beach? Like, how is it managed? Is it managed at all? What's the current situation?
Mr. Smee?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Currently, it is a Crown beach that is loosely managed by the Parks and Wildlife Service, but I'm not aware that they have put any controls on that beach. But basically, it's like any other beach that is under the jurisdiction of the Crown. For example, all beaches on Bruny Island are managed by Parks and Wildlife Service, and where they feel there's a need, they will impose various regulations, but I'm not aware that they've imposed anything on Little Conyngham Beach. So in that regard, the provisions of the Dog Control Act apply, in that it's a public area and your dog must be under effective control.
Right, thank you. That really clarifies it. I guess the issue here, and I mean, why this has come up, is that the public aren't aware of, I mean, I'm not aware, the public aren't aware of who manages beaches and whose responsibility is, and there's a sign there saying no dogs, but they don't know who put the sign up. Some people would assume that it's not a right to have dogs on the beach, so I don't know if there's any way of solving that. If it's not our beach and we have no relationship to it, then it's not our sign. It's up to parks as to what they do with it. But I guess that's the underlying issue, that people don't realise that the beach isn't managed by us. Whether there's some way of communicating that without stirring up the issue or looking like we're abdicating responsibility. But I think otherwise, I think what we're being told makes sense, that there's already sufficient recreation area without dogs, and there's sufficient dog exercise area, and I'd be reluctant to take on the additional expense of managing it.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Reid, would you like to close debate? Closed. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Reid, seconded by Councillor Fox. The Council resolves not to take out a licence over the Crown Land Reserve at Little Conyngham Beach. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Carried unanimously. The next item is on page 74, service delivery reviews. And there is a recommendation, I think, on page 77. Thank you, Councillor Fox. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Percy? Any discussion, councillors? Councillor Fox?
I thought the report was interesting in that it mentioned all the ongoing reviews which are happening, but it didn't actually say when they would come to council. And I just wondered whether there is any timeline expected, or do we expect it before the next election or before the end of this current financial year or 2017?
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Fox, we are working to complete those reviews in a timely manner, and in an ideal world we would like to have them completed prior to our budget deliberations that will commence shortly. the sad reality is that the last couple of months, being the holiday season, we have had staffing resources impacted with annual leave. That has slowed that progress down a little, as reflected in the report.
Thank you. Councillor Widder.
Yeah, I thought it's interesting to see how this has evolved. 5.1 really sets the scene for what's happened, and that is that whilst I think from reading the report it looks like there's a valuable process going on here, we're not going to find financial savings or any significant savings that's going to help support building a more sustainable budget, which is well set out the reasons for that. But there's also really, and I can understand why, but there's really, it's difficult in this process to actually identify and quantify what savings or what efficiencies are being made. What is, if you're finding efficiencies, how is that actually reflected, and is there a dollar value you can attribute to it? So from reading this, it looks like it's a valuable process that Council's going through, and I think it's a worthwhile one. I'm glad that it's being reported to us. But unfortunately, it's not going to save the budget.
Thank you, Councillor Winner. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Percy, that the quarterly report on service delivery reviews be noted. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? It's carried unanimously. The next item is on page 78, information reports. If I have a mover and a second, we'll deal with those. Thank you, Councillor Reid. Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Financial report for the period of the 1st of July 2016 to the 31st of December 2016 is there before us, Councillor Percy.
Really?
I did see your light up.
Thank you. Yeah, I've given a list of questions to Mr. Breen, and he's come back to me, so I just, probably for good governance, seeing we haven't got a Governance Finance Committee anymore, that I probably should raise these issues so they're on record anyway, and maybe bring the other councillors in line with my thoughts and his replies. So probably if we could just go to page 111, which is... this is a family daycare, so 2 years ago, when family daycare was reviewed, we were told that it needed to be cost neutral. Year to date is $28,000 unfavourable to budget. What is the likely end of year result for family daycare? Is there anything in place to change the situation? That's the first question. Do you want to just reply as you have, Mr. Brown? Through the chair, of course.
Mr. Brown?
through the chair. Yes, family daycare at the moment is suffering from a lack of educators. There's been a significant downturn in the number of educators. They're actively working at the moment to try and increase those numbers, particularly in the commencement of the new year. So that's certainly being looked at. I guess the other thing that will affect the financials for family daycare is the potential to earn some income from those premises, which is still being worked through. And hopefully if that comes to fruition, we'll see family daycare back in a break-even position.
Page 114, which is community services. I'll just ask, what has caused the unfavourable variance in the community project support? It's 30,000 unfavourable at the moment, and it's already more than the full year budget.
Mr. Green?
Yeah, through the chair, that's just a timing difference in the fact they're the grants that we give to community groups, and both lots of grants have gone out, so basically it'll come back into line with the budget throughout the year.
Page 119, there's sundry receipts of $26,000 in town planning. Just one, what constitutes that?
Mr. Breen?
Through the chair, yes, that relates to an error that occurred back actually in 2010, where a bond was released and didn't go through the appropriate clearing account but was expensed. In reviewing all our bonds, that's been picked up, and so the only way to bring it back into our back into line was to recognise $26,000 worth of income.
Mm-hmm. Page 122, expenses road activities. Council was $180,000 unfavourable variance, and just an assurance that it will be no more than budget for the end of the financial year or for the full year.
Mr. Green?
Yeah, through the chair, this relates to storm damage. I think there's about $200,000 worth of expenditure required in regards to fixing storm-related damage across the municipality. The manager, the works manager, is clearly aware where he needs to finish up at the end of the year, and he's working extremely hard to achieve that outcome. And part of the strategy that will be used is a little bit more work in capital expenditure, so we're going to do a bit more resheeting of roads so that the workforce will spend time in that particular area rather than in the operational field. So he's certainly working hard to get that back to the budget number.
Mm-hmm. Page 133 is workshop costs under employee costs, $31,606 unfavourable year to date. So the question was, why are employee costs so high? Have we employed another person in the workshop? Have we done a review lately of the cost benefit of maintaining our own vehicles? I thought this was going to happen, but haven't heard about any findings or outcomes.
Mr. Bray?
Yeah, through the chair, in regards to workshop employee costs, the reason for the over budget variance relates to the 60% on costs. When the budget was put together, I wasn't aware that there was an on-cost charge on workshop expenditure, so that'll be fixed in the next budget. Now, in regards to the second part of that question, as far as the outsourcing of some fleet maintenance, that's occurring at the moment. We're running a bit of a trial, and at the end of this financial year we'll review that trial to see whether it's something we roll out a little bit further throughout the council.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm on to capital expenditure on page 139. Why was there such an overrun on the Beretta waste transfers down at the left-hand turn lanes? It's 49% over budget, and also the Thomas Bull intersection is 58% over budget. How much, if any, is allowed before it needs to come back to council? At the time of the tender, were councillors aware that it was so much over the budget amount allowed? With the BWTS, is it necessary to build such a huge turn lane? Seems like a lot of money that could be used elsewhere. Is it over-engineered? It's cost us so far $212,000, and I think the budget was $142,000, so it's quite significant there.
Mr. Bray?
Yeah, through the chair, the Beretta left turn lane has been built to the standards required by the Department of State Growth. The overrun was primarily due to the requirement of DSG to increase the lane width from 114 metres to 140 metres and the need for installation of kerb and channel to avoid a clash with the fibre optic cable. For the Thomas Road intersection, additional land acquisition was required and greater than expected subgrade improvement caused by poor underlying material and groundwater surcharge from the nearby dam. Both projects were tendered but were under 250k and therefore did not require a formal report to council. Overruns for the project were managed via overall savings within the total capital expenditure program.
Then we've got page 142, the Alum Cliffs extension. There's an overrun there of 60%. I think it's C1387, I think that sounds right. Page 142. Yep.
Mr. Bray?
Yeah, through the chair. This one related to expenditure overruns on additional land acquisition costs required to complete the track. Council, remember there were some issues right towards the end of the project that council was made aware of.
Right. Page 142, there's a couple there that says twin oval cricket net win damage. It's under C2337 and T2338. There's a nearly $14,000 overrun there and a $69,000 overrun. I believe the description on those is wrong, so we might just talk about that, because it says cricket nets not insured, and I'm just asking, well, were they insured? And the authority to replace, what levels of authority are there for unbudgeted capex, and what value were the old ones on the books for, and have they been written off yet?
Mr. Bray?
Yeah, through the chair, these were incorrectly noted. The first one related to the site screen at Twin Ovals, and the second one related to Sherbet Oval change rooms. both of them were damaged in as part of storm events, and both are subject to insurance claims at the moment. So we're still waiting for the outcome of those particular claims.
Yeah. I'm just wondering why they're in CapEx when probably they should be put in sundry debtors insurance claims or something. But that's only
Through the chair, we certainly have had a discussion around that, and we'll look at changing our processes there.
Yep. C1600 on page 143. That's Civic Centre office renovations. There's an overrun there of 288%, and the Kingston Beach Oval new power supply an overrun of 66%. If we could have something,
Mr. Breed. Through the chair. There's an improvement variation of 16k over, which was above the 80k original budget. Remember, this one went over the two financial years, which included some unforeseen expenditure primarily involved with petitioning and the need to remove a staircase within the Civic Centre. The Kingston Oval power supply was linked to the Kingston Beach toilet demolition. Changes of power supply were required due to the demolition. A small overall overrun of 5k was incurred between the two projects. Both of these overruns were funded by overall savings in the capital expenditure program.
Just got two more questions, so not much longer. Can I please be advised of Council's procedures and policies for CapEx overruns and significant non-budgeted items? I'm not suggesting that the appropriate authorisation not been followed, but I would like to know what they are and in what which policy they relate and when it was updated.
Mr. Breen. Yeah, through the chair, primarily at the moment, what's been set up is within council is a infrastructure management group. This group meets on a monthly basis and has a look at all over expenditure variations to the program. The group's only recently been set up and has set up a terms of reference or draft terms of reference, which includes things like financial delegations. Essentially, the group has authority up to, or is proposing authority up to $50,000, and anything above that goes to the general manager. Essentially, there doesn't seem to be any policy or procedure on this, so this is our first attempt to put something together, and it'll certainly be part of the budget upcoming budget discussions that we will have with council to determine council's comfort level with what this group is actually proposing. I guess the past practice has been within the tender arrangements, bearing in mind that up until recently, tenders above 100,000 went to council, tenders below 100 didn't go to council. That's recently moved to 250, and I think there's a feeling that that's not an appropriate level for a delegation. So that will be the basis of the discussions that we have during the budget process.
Mm-hmm. And the question we always ask each time about CapEx, we've expended 19% up for 6 months. I'm just wondering if you have an opinion, or we could have an opinion on whether the CapEx budget, not including Kingston Park, will be achieved this financial year. If there are particular projects that won't be completed, can they be highlighted, please?
Mr. Breed? Through the chair, the Exec Manager Engineering plans to bring a report to Council in February, which will look into this issue in far greater detail. But essentially, I guess the main project at this stage that looks like not going ahead is the Beach Road Margate project, which is very much dependent on Tas Water, and looks like that project will be deferred to 18-19. There are a few other minor capital expenditure programs that are being looked at the moment, and we'll get greater clarity next month.
Yep. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brad. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. Mine will be brief because you've covered all my questions. And many, many more. But I appreciate your depth of the questioning. And look, I just had a question about page 88, where it talks about the operating income and rates are higher because the rates are higher, according to that sentence. Rates income is higher than budget by $306,000, primarily due to the general rate being $254,000 higher than the budget estimate. Is that something we'll be at risk of answering my own questions? In the budget session, will we look at how we're estimating those rates? Because it's interesting that we'd estimate it so much lower than what it really is. Is there any reason that
that's happened? I mean, it's nice to get extra money, but it's even better if we estimate things correctly.
Mr. Murray? Through the chair. Look, we'll certainly be having a good look at the way we calculate our rates. Sometimes these things are a little bit difficult to get on top of. And last year we had a significant number of rates that were, because we'd gone through the process of revaluation, there was a significant delay in getting full rates out of the Valuer General's Department. So while we thought we'd finished the process, there was another bulk amount that came in later in the equation. So the good thing is this will be ongoing revenue for us, so it certainly improves our budget position, and we're pretty confident this year that we'll get a much better estimate.
Okay, so you're saying because that was a once-off thing that we had at revaluation, that it's likely to be way through it this time around. Thank you. Family daycare you've covered. In the user charges, it talked about the building and plumbing fees being high. Is that the building fees that we're going to lose in these changes? So that's not going to be ongoing, I tell you.
Mr. Brett?
Yes, through the chair, that's correct. Yes, they will certainly reduce in the future.
Yep. There's a comment in the employee costs that said major negative variance in town planning, $40,000 over budget due to the need for additional resources to cover workload. Is that anticipated to be an ongoing additional need, or is there any more detail on that?
Mr. Brett?
Yes, through the chair. Unfortunately, that seems to be ongoing at the moment. It's certainly an area that is struggling with the workload and recording significant overtime. So it looks as though unless the whole the expansion within the community reduces, there still be significant pressure in that area.
We don't anticipate too. Well, put that as a question if you like, but I guess really just the thing I'd highlight at page 90 again, as I, in my limited financial knowledge, read it, we budget an underlying result of 466 in the red, and the budget forecast is 1.96 million in the red, which seems like a big difference to me. I'll leave that as a comment, I guess. I mean, we all have to be aware of it.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Fox?
Appreciate the discussions we've had around the table and the issues that have been raised. There's just a really little one on page 89, which I underlined earlier, and I think the others have all been answered, but the sale of assets, the reason for the large increase in costs is the sale of 160 Burwood Drive to the Girl Guides at $231,000 loss. How did that come about?
Mr. Brown.
Through the chair, that was a council decision whereby the land was transferred to the Girl Guides for a revenue of $1, and the value of the land was $231,000, so thus causing the loss on write-off.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Thank you for the report. In particular, I noticed that we've got a different set out for the capital works that provides us with more detail this time. I don't know whether that's a result of the new system that's been put in place, but it's very useful. But I just threw up a couple of questions for me, and one of them was, what is a... it's a basic question. Under project types, can you explain to me what a parent project is? Because to me it's take the rubbish out or unpack the dishwasher, and I'm sure that's not what's intended here. So just to fill in my knowledge gap, please.
Mr. Brown.
Through the chair. Essentially a parent account is where we might put some money, for instance, resealing. We might put aside $1 million for resealing throughout the year, and then what we will do as we progress, we will get specific projects that will sit under that parent account, so we then redistribute the funds over a number of different projects as we get a little bit more clarity.
Right.
So that's essentially the arrangement.
Right. So rather than just being represented as a lump sum, it's actually now being broken down.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So in relation to, I'm looking on page 138, on the third line down, sorry, second line down under roads and footpaths, the 0116 access ramps. So there was $20,000 there, but then the $20,000 has disappeared. So my first question is why?
Mr. Brown?
I suspect it relates to line 3.
Sorry, through the chair, yes. That was moved down to the line below the Roslyn Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
So it was spent on the access ramp there. So basically, we said $20,000 in the parent account. That was then spent, so it was transferred down there. And that's it got $7,618 expenditure against it at this stage.
So I noticed that that's for, I can't quite, don't understand. This is Roslyn Avenue, Vic Algona.
It's the roundabout. And the pram access.
Right. Okay. Well. Mobility access. Yeah, okay, thank you. And then further, going back up on the previous page, I think it was 137. Just wanted to make sure I was reading this right. The first project, C613 IT carry forwards, I was a little bit confused because there was no annual plan budget for the first item of the IT server and hardware upgrades. There was external funding of $16,000, but there was year-to-date expenditure of $67,000.
Mr. Brown, are you aware of this one?
Through the chair, yes. IT replacement and upgrade costs are essentially funded from a reserve. So what we will do is we'll move funds from the reserve into this report as a funding adjustment. So that will come through in the next report.
Right, so they don't get classified as like parent or something like that. They just
no. IT, yeah. Basically, set aside a reserve every year for the replacement and upgrade of IT equipment. When we use the funds in this way, then we'll transfer the reserve across and reduce the reserve down.
Okay. And I had another question, and now I can't find it because I've been flicking around. Oh, I know. Page 137. It was towards the bottom, C1610, said the Beretta Waste Transfer Station perimeter fencing. That was unbudgeted for. Was it a need identified that we required? That the fencing was required down there for some sort of safety reason or for security or?
Mr. Brown?
Yeah, no, I'll have to take that question on notice.
Okay. Because I would have thought that a waste transfer station would be the last place you'd want to break into. But you never know. All right, thank you.
Mr. Berry?
Yes, just like to share Councillor Percy's concern about the expenditure on the capital budget, 19% after 6 months, and look forward to a report on that.
Thank you. For the record, it's 7:03 and Councillor Winter is leaving or has left the meeting. The next part is the Mayor's communications, and I would like to thank Councillor Berry and Councillor Percy for undertaking those school visitations. Can't give you any more of an update on the local government reform. General Manager updated that last meeting. Number 19 was an interesting one, the hothouse, which is done by Fusion Southern Tasmania at Forest Glen up at Grice's Road, which has had a long history with council. They're actually
now producing and providing food to many welfare groups within our municipality that otherwise would not have anything on their table. So that work is really going well. The other one is item 31. The General Manager and I met with Rhian Heading, Minister for Infrastructure. I put the 2018 Bruny Island Ferry contract, which we started with, but I think most importantly, discussions centred round that over the next 2 years, it is the intention of GSG to review and improve the general access bus service around the state. And with that, they propose to engage with the wider Tasmanian communities over the next 12 months, seeking their input into what the new bus network should look like. For us, it's an increase in the weekday frequency of service from Margate towards Hobart, so down as far as Margate, which they believe and I know will be welcomed by the community. But DSG acknowledged that there will need to be discussions over the proposed trade-offs, like weekends and weekdays, for those living further away from Hobart than Kingston. There will be a discussion on creating a more frequent and integrated service from Kingston into Hobart to address the congestion and the general travelling needs of people in Kingston and south. It's also important for local communities to be involved in the process, and from DSG they're proposing to consult very widely to get a community stance on this, and they will work with council through this period of time. When final recommendations go to the minister, he wants to be sure that they incorporate all the input from the local community so that the communities are, you know, obviously happy with that arrangement. We did speak with that one of the big issues is frequency. The last thing you want to do is to get on a bus, say, at Margate at 8 o'clock in the morning and then can't get home till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's the type of thing that suggest to people that in that's the case they need to drive to Kingston Park here and then take a more frequent bus, and of course that has other ramifications. So I think in the end they indicated the DSG will be directly engaging with stakeholders, particularly potential disaffected users, and they will conduct forums with key groups and anyone else that we might like to pass on to them. So I thought that was an interesting part of our meeting.
Could I make a comment here?
And could I just, for the record, advise the Councillor when to return at 7:07? Yes, Councillor Fox.
Once again, when I was parked at the Bruny Island Ferry, I noticed a MTT bus come along and stop by the ferry terminal and drive off 1 minute before the Bruny Island Ferry arrived. And when I was at the opening of the ferry road a number of years ago, as a group of residents were standing there, about 10 of them, and they said, "Watch this." The bus arrived and drove off just as the ferry came into port. And my husband rang the metro people and they said, "Ah, but the bus is on schedule." And we said, "Yeah, but what about the people on the ferry? It's impossible for those people to catch the bus." "Oh, but the bus is on schedule." So I really think that's an issue that the community are absolutely livid about and have regularly repeated their concerns to Metro, and they do absolutely nothing about it.
Thank you. We'll certainly follow that through. Councillor Atkinson.
Could I ask, speak on the same topic, having caught the bus from the ferry? You're right. I was interested in this whole, you know, the whole issue of raising that the state government is going to consult. Are we going to provide a position from council and as input into this, or what's the? Because when there's certainly, you know, issues that you personally have raised with the mayor, I think there's presumably a variety of things that people around the table pick up from community members. What's our plans?
The ones that I just quoted then, councillor, are really from the minister himself.
Okay.
He was certainly on board with the idea that he would like to see the service far more acceptable, which would obviously mean more bums on seats, and on that basis wants to talk to the community, particularly if the community have to do some trade-offs. But certainly
comments from council would be welcome as well. So I think when we see some of these things coming back, we can obviously have a view if we wish to take that forward to him.
Do any of the discussions go broader into infrastructure into bus stops? I mean, I know when I've driven up from Kettering recently, I'll see several bus stops with, you know, a dozen people waiting at them, none of who can, or three can sit down, and it wouldn't be any good on a rainy day or a sunny day. Is that sort of in the plans, or you don't know?
That's been conveyed to the Minister over, I think, a number of years, or conveyed to DSG. Certainly when we were talking with him, we were virtually centred from Margate North.
Mm-hmm.
So that was where the big movements or changes to timetables may well occur.
As you know, I'm very concerned about the bus stops in central Kingston being totally inadequate, and being told that it's not council's responsibility but someone's responsibility.
That's
And no one seems to want to pay for them.
And Metro, has no money to pay for them.
Yeah, and it's a major disincentive to people using public transport. If there's nowhere to sit, they go, yuck, I don't like the bus.
Agreed.
Can I comment on other things in your...
Yes, certainly, mate.
I just had a question about item 6 and 8, you know, they're both to do with this 100th birthday anniversary. Is that sort of a council policy that we celebrate 100 birthdays that we're aware of, or what was the sort of driver behind that? Was that there were two events for...
I became aware that there was a community member turning 100 and indicated that we would be more than willing to provide a brief afternoon or morning tea, and since that time I've been asked how many 100-year-olds are there in the municipality, and there are five. Four of them are 100 and one person is 102, but I think that those people that gathered there, certainly this particular lady has lived here all of her life, and I would think if someone gets to that stage, that's something that perhaps we should do.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Bastard?
Can I just ask, item 36, you met with the Honourable Julie Collins. I was just wondering what you met with her about.
Mainly the item that we discussed was black spots on Bruny Island. She has taken the issue up with the Federal Minister and copied me with the response from the Federal Minister, which the Federal Minister believes is going to be solved by the new Telstra and Vodafone towers, which quite will not be resolved by that. The issue we have now in the black spots on Bruny Island is Cloudy Bay South, and her concerns are, and I think Council's concerns are too, that because of so much traffic, particularly in summer months, to the Cape Bruny or the Cape Bruny Light, if a car disappeared off the road or there was an accident, you are waiting for the next vehicle to come through, or it's a long walk to the closest telephone or to get service. So there could be a disaster there waiting to happen, and certainly Julie Collins MP is aware of that and is endeavouring to assist us to get that resolved.
Okay, so this is Black Spots Telecommunication, not Black Spots Roads.
Black Spots Telecommunications. Thank you. We'll move on to the next one, Kingborough Waste Services Bi-Monthly Report. Councillor Weir.
Look, there's not a lot of news, you know, but always strikes me as odd when we get to risk here that we don't mention that the balance sheet has list negative assets on it. I mean, if this was a private company, this would be, in my opinion anyway, insolvent. That means you're unable to, if called upon, you're unable to pay your debts, and that's what KWS would be in. There was a proposal from staff to council last year that would have dealt with that, and councillors chose a different path. So I guess to phrase it as a question is, does council or KWS have a plan to get KWS back to a positive balance sheet position?
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Winter, that has been a topic of ongoing discussion with council officers and the consultants engaged to undertake the waste management strategy, and they will be bringing that to a council workshop next Monday for further discussion, so those discussions continue.
Okay, I'll look forward to that. Thanks. Councillor Vestar.
I was just going to ask why, when the waste transfer station is open at 7 in the morning, the reuse shop is not open till 9.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Vestar. Councillor Vestar, I'm not sure that I can answer that one without taking on notice, although I'm looking at my colleague Tim, who may be able to answer it for you.
I don't have an answer, but I can tell you that the reuse shop is not trading profitably at the moment. We're looking at it, and so extending the hours would obviously increase labour costs and would have an implication in that way.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Councillor Percy.
Yeah, I'm just wondering with the price of iron going up, whether they expect to get start getting revenue again. I think at the moment we're just transferring it out at no cost, but going back a couple of years ago, I think we're actually making money out of it. I suppose that's the first question. The other one I probably just need to note, that even though the deficit is a lot less or greater than what it should have been, it was 26 actual and was 6 budgeted, I noticed there's disposal of hazardous waste, which cost them $10,000 or $9,921 because somebody left some asbestos down at the tip. I think that'd be an unusual situation, so I mean we'd have to take that in consideration when we look at the operating deficit. So it's probably not as bad as it looks at first point.
Any further comments? No? We'll move on to the next one, which is the Governance and Property Services Quarterly Report, October to December inclusive. Councillor Atkinson.
I just had a question on page 165. There's a comment that the compliance requests have increased by 15% on the previous year. Whether there's any reason for that, whether that's any modelling of what the 15% increase years of pretty significant increase, and what affecting that's having on current resourcing, and whether there's likely to be requests for increased resourcing in the next budget.
Mr. Spain?
Yeah, through the chair, the increase is across the board. There's no one factor that I could point to. I guess it reflects a higher expectation within the community in relation to our compliance activities. The trend, as you can see in the graph, has grown each year. And to answer your question in relation to the budget, we will reach a point where, in order to continue to meet the demands of the community in relation to our compliance activities, particularly in relation to fire hazard abatement, there will come a point where there will be a request for increased resources. Whether it happens next financial year or not is too early to say.
Councillor Bester.
Yes, I was just going to ask, it's a sort of a vague thing. Impounded dogs, so we've got a dog ranger. What happens if you have a feral cat on your property? What do you actually do about that? Because we don't ring the ranger. Well, no, it's not a joke. It's just been killing my duck.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the short answer is we don't deal with feral cats. They're not our responsibility.
Councillor Fox.
Just had a brief question on 162. I read here on the second dot point down at the bottom of the page, a condition assessment has been undertaken on all of Council's public toilets. Will that come to Council?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, absolutely. The intent is to compile a public toilet strategy based on that condition assessment. I think it's revealed that the state of our public toilets is pretty poor, and we need to start addressing that in a strategic manner, and there will be a strategy come to council within the next couple of months.
Thank you. We'll move on to council allowances.
Sorry, and expenses.
Yes, Councillor Reid, we'll go back to governance.
Sorry, just in relation to the infringements, open air burning, does that relate to, there's quite a few, there was a total of 8 in 3 months, does that primarily relate to residents who are on a normal size residential block who are using an incinerator or burning, which is of course against state government legislation, or is it something else?
Mr. Smee.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor. It's our bylaw that prohibits burning in residential areas. So they the statistics record complaints from neighbours who have a neighbour who is burning off in a residential area.
So are they only complaints, or are these actual infringements that were issued, the things that we're looking at on this table?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. What we're looking at in the table relates to complaints and or requests that come through our customer services and get recorded as an activity, if you like.
Thank you. On this stage, we'll go to the council allowances and expenses.
Look, I'll...
Councillor Atkinson.
Because I'm being egged on to ask it. I was just interested, Mayor, in the negative $35 that you incurred on internet and telephone.
Quite easy. That was shown against me last year, and then we got a refund. We'll move on to council attendance at meetings.
Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Berry.
Yeah, I noticed my internet and telephone costs remain incomprehensible to me. I have no telephone that's charged to council, and I can't believe that the internet costs. I'm looking forward to seeing some figures for next year.
Councillor Berry, do you wish staff to investigate that internet and telephone?
I have tried. No, thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Comments noted. Attendance register, the meetings. And finally, the donations table. On that basis, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Reid, seconded by Councillor Bastone. The following information reports be noted. They're 1 to 7 as listed. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Is carried unanimously. We'll move on to, I think it's page 170. And that's confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. If I can have a mover and a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Thank you, Councillor Fox. That in accordance with Regulation 15, the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015, the following items are to be dealt with in closed session, and they're listed there. Application for leave of absence, the information report, delegated authority. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. The next item?
Yes.
Thank you. Yes, Councillor Reid and Councillor Winter. That in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015, that Council move into closed session. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. In accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recordings of the open session of this meeting will now cease. The open session of Council is adjourned at 7:24.